When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
Hello and welcome to The Rest Is Football with Alan Shearer, Micah Richards and me, Gary Lineker. And Micah has been working for CBS this week for the Champions League while Al and I have been watching from home. 18 goals in four games. What a couple of days football we've seen, haven't we?
Wow. Honestly, you know, when it comes to these stages and we talked about the Champions League, I even seen a tweet from you talking about the Champions League is boring or something of that nature years ago.
No, it just means when you're on the show, that's what he means.
Micah, can I explain that to you?
Oh, yes, I would like to before we go into the football part. Can you explain yourself?
It was because it was a ridiculously brilliant night and it was irony.
Oh, no, I thought that was a resurfaced tweet from ages ago.
No. I was just being ironic.
So
don't worry, I didn't really think it was dull.
Well, obviously, but I thought that was resurfaced.
But it is the month of April, so anyway.
I'm with you now. But anyway, Arsenal Bayern, what a game that was. You know why? Because when you've not been in the competition for so long, and then when you get to the knockout stages, it's how are you going to fare? I thought I was a little bit nervous against Porto, but against Bayern, I thought, okay, Arsenal, they're on the front foot. They've come to have a game. Obviously, they're at home as well, so they need to score goals. But I just thought, in the end-to-end, the Harry Kane coming and scoring and him being smug, I just thought the whole event was fantastic. That's proper football.
Were you there?
No, we was in the studio. So we had the Arsenal, obviously, Bayern on one screen, and then the Man City, Madrid. But I didn't want to hog everything. So I don't know if, Alan, you want to take away Man City?
I just think it was like an unbelievable week for the Champions League. I mean, it had absolutely everything in every game, didn't it? It had great skill, errors from players, great goals, errors from referees, whatever you mention, it had it in all of the games. I mean, wow, what two nights of brilliant football.
I mean, I must say, I campaigned for years to get rid of the away goals rule. And when it came to fruition a couple of years ago, I got a lot of stick from people because I was kind of saying, this is good for the game, because a lot of people going, no, it'll force the away teams to be really negative in the first leg. No, you don't know. And the twists and turns that you can get. But I thought fundamentally it was unfair for a start. And secondly, I always thought it made the home teams in the first leg play incredibly cautiously because they're terrified of conceding that double jeopardy, of possible double jeopardy of an away goal. And I don't want to gloat, but I must say the last 2 days, I think in the terms of the first legs, have kind of proved my point. The only other thing to get rid of now, and this again is purely because of fairness, I think you shouldn't have extra time if the scores are level after the two games. I think you should go straight to penalties, purely because at the moment that gives the home side in the second leg an extra half an hour at home, which is an advantage that no team should have an advantage, certainly not in the quarterfinal stages of the Champions League. The last 16, because they earn that place at playing the second game at home because of where you finish in the group. But in the quarters, that's not the case. So, for example, if Arsenal go to the Allianz next week and draw, then it goes to extra time and Bayern Munich get an extra half an hour at home. Doesn't seem fair to me.
I would say that across the board in terms of extra time.
Yeah, I think it's time to get rid of extra time, with the exception possibly of a final. I think that's probably, even then I wouldn't, because I think once it gets to extra time, everyone just wants it to go to penalties anyway, don't they? Everyone loves watching a penalty shootout.
Apart from the players.
Well, yeah, that's a very good point. That's most definitely true. And we might as well start with the Arsenal game then, Mike, as you've mentioned it. I was watching Real Madrid mainly, and I had Arsenal on the laptop. So all the games were belters, but the Arsenal one certainly had a bit of something. Excellent start from Arsenal and a brilliant finish from Bukayo Saka.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, when you have so many good youngsters, especially going into a tournament, we've talked about Declan Rice, we've talked about Phil Foden, and we'll get onto a bit later as well. But Saka, honestly, like, he is such an intelligent, amazing, wonderful talent. And I say that because he sort of takes up this role that I'm going to be the man of the team in the big moments. And you expect that, of course, when you get in the world-class tag or going to be world-class. But how you define world-class or how you define a top player is performing in the big games. And he didn't hide. You know, the top players that don't hide. And he took his goal so well. I could see it before he even... I was like, he's going to bend this into the far corner. And then his execution was just brilliant. And he's such a wonderful player. And fair play for Arsenal, because if you look at in terms of experience in the competition, and we sort of said that a little bit before, yeah, they've got Jesus and Zinchenko and that sort of players. Havertz, obviously, who scored against Man City in a final at Chelsea. But it's a young Jorginho. Team. Yeah, Jorginho, a young team who... I thought, fair play to them. They grew, can we say, cojones? Is that what they call them? Cojones.
Cojones.
Big, cojones. Cojones. Big balls, if you're English. Big balls.
Is what cojones grandes.
Grandes, grandes. And I just thought the team, yes. I can see them going to Bayern and actually getting a result, because tactically, we've seen what they can do at Man City in terms of that low block. But we've also seen him be expansive as well. It sets up a great time, that second leg. Really does.
Did Bayern surprise you a bit? Or did you see what you expected?
You know what, Al? It's weird with Bayern, because Bayern have actually been playing well in some games. It's just defensively, they've been a little bit all over the place. So Harry Kane scored, what, 30-odd goals? Sané, you see what Sané can do when he's on the ball?
Yeah.
Gnabry, these are good players. They're having an off-season, but they've still got individual talent, which is going to give you individual moments. So going to Allianz next week is going to be a tough game, really tough. If something clicks for them, Arsenal could be in trouble. But the only reason I would say Arsenal have a better chance is because right now they're performing better as a team. There's been grumbles about in the Bayern camp that the players are not getting out. Obviously, Tuchel's leaving and all that sort of stuff. But do you remember Tuchel at Chelsea? Things weren't going well to go and win the Champions League. So don't put it past them that they could win that game. But I just think, as a team, Arsenal a little bit more together.
Sane and Gnabry were absolutely fantastic, weren't they? They were brilliant there.
Mm, they really were.
Gnabry coming back to his old stomping ground as well, celebrating in front of the fans. I don't like that, Gnabry.
Love that.
Settle down.
Really?
Settle down.
Come on.
It's a Champions League quarter final. You celebrate in a club that he's... Oh, he's stirring the pot, are you?
Not celebrating in front of your fans, your former club or whatever. What a load of rubbish.
He can celebrate, but he's doing... You know, he's coming down... You know, he's doing all that sauce nonsense. You can't do that at Emirates. They're coming back for you, Gnabry. They're coming back for you.
Harry Kane scored again, albeit from the penalty spot, of course. He's scored the most goals ever against Arsenal with 14, with 6 of them coming at the Emirates. It was a totally different kind of penalty that he took. Not different from everybody, but yeah, different from what he's taken them in the past. And he gave it away after he'd done a bit of research, hadn't he, on Raya, and the fact that he thought he went really, really early, which
he
certainly did.
Oh,
he
my God, it's unbelievable how early he went. I mean, he was practically down before he even had hit the ball, hadn't he? I mean, I know that you should never, ever change your mind, but if you're ever going to change it, then when the keeper's lying down towards his right-hand side, then you can change it before you've hit it.
Yeah, he went so early, the referee had barely given the penalty.
Yeah, I mean, there's early and there's bloody early, and that was bloody early, wasn't it? My God. But he was the calmest man in the stadium, Harry, wasn't he? No problem. Back of the net.
He's had a remarkable season, hasn't he? And this is obviously, realistically, his last chance of silverware, given how far behind Bayer Leverkusen they are in the Bundesliga. But one thing, no one can fault his performances this season and say it's his fault.
Yeah, he's done his bit, hasn't he?
Yeah, which is the old strikers thing. I scored my goal. It's down to you, like the back, isn't it? As well.
Yeah, he's done his job.
Trossard's been a good signing, hasn't he, for Arsenal?
Trossard's been excellent signing, just because he can play in so many different positions as well. Could play on the left, could play false nine, number 10, could play him a little bit deeper at eight, and he could play on the right. And when he comes on, he's in scoring important goals. You know, sometimes when you bring a sub on, we used to call them fizzy drinks in our days, basically. All over the place, come on, beat 1-2, and then the final product is not great. With Trossard, he's a little bit more measured, he makes good runs, and he can finish. So, yeah, he's been vital for what they've needed this season. Just brought a little bit of calm.
What do we think about the Saka penalty at the end decision and the way it was handled? And I mean, if they'd given it on the field, there's no question they wouldn't have turned it over. You can argue he flicked his leg out. Well, he did probably flick his leg out. But if you look at it at normal speed, which is what I always like to look at these decisions by, it looked like a penalty to me anyway. But
I didn't think it was a penalty. I thought the ref got it right.
Therefore, it's not a clear and obvious error, so it shouldn't have been turned over.
I mean, you see it a lot now, don't you? Is that players trying to make it into a penalty. I get it. I understand it. But there's no doubt he's put his leg out for the contact to be a lot more than it could have been. So I didn't think it was a penalty.
I have to agree with Alan on this one. And, you know, huge moment of the game, late doors, at the Emirates. Is your decision going to be swayed? I just thought the fact that keepers in the Premier League, when you're in that position, and you guys will know better than me, but like a forward player in that position, sometimes like goalkeepers in the Premier League come rushing out. But Neuer, he didn't come rushing out. He does that thing. But he does that. That's how he normally saves. He has one arm to the left and sort of puts his left knee down to the floor. So he doesn't come out and foul him. It's sort of he's put his body out, made his stance, and then Saka has sort of used that or tried to use that to advantage and stuck out his right leg. So I have to agree with Al. I think it's not a penalty. And he's done that before as well, Saka, where he just left his leg in. And yeah, I would have loved it to be a penalty, but...
Watch Jamie Vardy do it for years.
Yeah, we get away with it, but yeah, I agree with Al. No penalty.
Should we see that as a dive then, or is that not a dive?
I mean, so many players do it, don't they? I mean, I'm not saying it's the right thing to do. Whoever we are, whatever we are, is that you're always trying to gain some sort of advantage, aren't you? I mean, if someone's pushing you, then you want to make it into a proper push. Is it a dive? No, it's trying to manipulate the situation, which most, if not all, players do.
There was another possible penalty in that game, wasn't there, with that remarkable incident with Gabriel when he just picked the ball up in the box when he didn't realise the ref had blown. What did you make of that one? Because they had a bit of a whinge about that Bayern Munich, didn't they, Thomas Tuchel?
I mean, come on, that is ridiculous. That's one of the worst decisions I think I've ever seen. Like, you can't just pick the ball. The whistle's gone. It goes out to Gabriel. He just picks up the ball and throws it. What is he doing? And then the excuse afterwards saying, oh, and we don't know if it's true. So Thomas Tuchel come out and basically said he couldn't give it because it was like school football. It would have been ridiculous to give that decision in a game
it's
of
like
this
an unwritten
magnitude.
Rule, isn't
so
it?
What do you mean? What do you mean? They're not quotes. That's what he said, the ref has said. So the ref might have not said that. But for not to give that, I just think it's ridiculous. Such a poor decision.
Really? Do you think it would decide a game like that? I mean, it's like, I know technically, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, but technically, even what's technically about it? The whistle had gone, he played to him, he picked the ball up with his hands.
Yeah, but two hands, Micah. So let's...
the most bizarre. And the thing is about it as well, you've got VAR. You've got, this is what you said, it's going to be brought in for howlers. It's going to be brought in.
Yeah.
If there's ever a howler, that's a howler, isn't it not?
Well, I think Gabriella had a howler, that's for sure, but he got away with it.
Can't go against you on that.
Well, technically, you're absolutely spot on, but, you know, I think it's the spirit of the game, Joe. It's the spirit of the game, Micah.
No, let's not go spirit of the game, because this is what happens is, because now we've got a podcast with a football, and it's Gary Lineker comes out and says, spirit of the... No. We said howler.
No.
This is an absolute...
We say howler. We say howler.
When they say H, you say howler. H, howler, H.
What the hell are you on about here? I know, I get you, Mike. It was a very unusual circumstance as well. A lot of people saying, Harry Kane should have seen red for an elbow. I thought he kind of marched into Harry's elbow. A little bit like Alan Shearer headbutted on his feet by Neil Lennon.
We shouldn't laugh at these situations, but come on, that's not an elbow.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. Never an elbow. No, people are saying, well, he had a look behind. Well, he had a look behind, but he's just basically got his arms out, hasn't he?
There's no law that says you can't look behind.
And handball it.
Never an elbow.
No, I totally agree with you on that one. Let's move on to the Manchester City game at the Bernabeu. That was absolutely wonderful. Open, expansive, attacking game of football between two excellent sides. Some incredible goals, starting with that super canny Bernardo Silva free kick in the first minute. Looning the keeper, I think you'd obviously have to blame him for that because he did get hands on it. But it was still a real piece of quick thinking for Bernardo Silva, wasn't it?
Brilliant. Tried to read the situation. The keeper didn't even look the right fool in the end. There's no doubt you have to put the blame on the keeper. He was expecting for it to come in. But, I mean, it was such clever play from Bernardo Silva. And what a great start it gave City. Yeah. Brilliant. What a game.
Oh, brilliant game. Both teams obviously missing their first choice goalkeeper. I think Real Madrid might be missing Courtois perhaps more than Man City missing Edison. Or what do you think?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think Ortega has been outstanding when he's come in. Obviously, we talked about that little skill at Crystal Palace where he did a drag back, so calm on the pressure. Yeah, he could have probably need Edison's experience back at some stage, but right now, Ortega's in really good form. Before the game, I was always a little bit worried, and we've talked so much about how Man City play and who was going to play right back. Was it going to be Akanji? Was it going to be Rico Lewis? Was John Stones going to go there? He's played there before. And yeah, I didn't know how they was going to react to that because that left-hand side, which had to be occupied by Rodrigo or Vinicius or Bellingham, I thought it was going to be a very long night because Kyle Walker obviously wasn't available. And then Kevin De Bruyne getting ill, you know, just before the game as well. But I thought they performed really well out there in Madrid.
And don't forget as well, Real Madrid's third choice keeper's in goal, Lunin, isn't he? Because Kepa's injured as well, who went there from Chelsea. So it's funny how actually some of the top teams have got goalkeepers out, isn't it? Alisson as well at Liverpool. So it's quite unusual. They were very, very dangerous on the break, Real Madrid. Largely played the counter-attacking style. And with Man City's high line, and you mentioned Kyle Walker there, he's a big miss given the way that City play, I think, particularly when you're playing teams like they are with Vinicius Jr. down that side.
Exactly that. I think like it's Kyle Walker gets so disrespected.
Do you think?
Yeah, in terms of what he gives a team sometimes offensively. He said he gets into good positions at times and whatnot. But Kyle Walker's positions has changed so much in terms of what he wants for this team. He's going to get the ball, go inside, and stop all threat on the counter-attack, on the transition to allow whoever wants to go inside, whether it be Guardiola, whether it be John Stones going into play in midfield or whatever that may be, sometimes Akanji. But just against Real Madrid, every time it went, and if you watched the game, it's sort of like no one wanted to play centre-forward for Real Madrid. It's almost like they both wanted to play on that left-hand side. And you know how dangerous Vinicius can be, but Rodrigo as well. Rodrigo's pace on the counter-attack was phenomenal. So for Man City to basically contain that, and yeah, like you said, second leg's going in, it's like a nil-nil. And to potentially have Kevin De Bruyne back for the second leg and Kyle Walker, I think that was a really good result because I was nervous. I'm not going to lie. I was nervous for Man City.
Is he close, Walker, to fitness? Do you know?
There was reports basically saying he was going to be okay for this tie. It wasn't to be. So obviously they've got Luton on Saturday and then Madrid the week after on the Wednesday. So hopefully it'll give him enough time. Hopefully.
What about the battle with Rudiger and Haaland?
And Haaland. I think Rudiger won that one.
Definitely
didn't
he? Came out on top, no doubt about it. I thought he marked him really well.
You know what? As you two strikers, and when we talked about Haaland, and Alan mentioned it on Match of the Day probably 18 months ago now, when Man City were creating certain situations in the final third, they needed that number nine. That is still the case now. They still need a number nine to give them a different option. Haaland scored, 40, 50 odd goals last season, won the treble. He's still doing his job. That's what he was bought in to do. Man City won the league without a real recognised number nine. You know, false nine, we was talking about it. But it seems as though every time we talk about, or pundits or whatever, talk about Haaland in, oh, he's not had a great game, like, we're being disrespectful to him. We're not being disrespectful at all. It's just the fact that it's nice from you guys' position. If things are not going your way in terms of you're making 40 runs, you always say it, guys, I might make 40 runs, might not get the ball. But sometimes the way Man City play, at times he needs to be stronger, especially when he's coming up against someone like a Rudiger, you know, or a Saliba or a Gabriel who are going to be in the back of him. And I want to ask you guys, is there any other ways that he can not improve his game, but okay, that's not his game, but how can I still be effective when I'm not getting on the end of these runs that he's been making, basically, you know?
I used to, I can only speak for myself as that. When he basically went head to head with Rudiger the other night, didn't he? Rudiger said, I'm marking you. And I really enjoyed that because basically it's you against him and I would fancy my chances against anyone in a 50-50, you know? But, I mean, Rudiger marked him well. He was strong. He was quick. He was. Do you know what? He was really good at Rudiger. He was actually really good at reading it really quickly, you know, about how and where to go and get the ball and got the bounce of it before he did. But, I mean, I said it last season when he was scoring all these goals. The one thing that he could brush up on, there's no doubt, is actually bringing people into the game. But he'll get better at that. That's fine. I mean, he's a brilliant goal scorer, but that's not to say that there aren't other parts of his game that he can't improve on. I don't think we should shy away and hide away from saying that about him. He'd say that about himself as well, wouldn't he?
Of course he would. He can improve his game. He knows he can. He's still a very young footballer, and particularly for a striker. And that side of the things will improve. I'm going to talk a little bit about the centre-forwards union here, the number nine union. Alan would have had this. I had this. Haaland's now getting this. The minute as a striker you go a game or two without a goal, the whole world says, well, he does nothing now if he doesn't score. Well, obviously, but it's a numbers game, scoring. There has to be patches where you don't score. But invariably, that's not your fault. As long as you keep making the runs and keep getting in there and keep getting in there, if you're missing chances, so be it, because you've got to miss chances to score chances. But this stuff about, oh, when he doesn't score, he does nothing. Well, that's not quite true. But of course, that's because that's, you know, the nature of the job is you are there to score the goals, unless you're, you know, an all-round player. But mostly those all-round players don't score quite as many unless you're someone like Messi. But he's a different level to anyone else. So, I mean, Alan, in your career, you remember it? Two games without a goal and everyone's, oh, he's not what he was and he doesn't Absolutely. Make the moves anymore. He's a League Two player. What did Van der Vaart say after he's described Haaland as useless if he's not scoring goals? Well, I mean, if he scores a goal almost every game that he plays, I think that'll do nicely, thank you. You can give the ball away a couple of times in the match if you want to. But obviously, Haaland will be frustrated. We all were. Alan, if you go one game without a goal, you're always miffed, aren't you? Because the drive will be there. But he'll keep making the runs, and you know, sometimes it works for you, sometimes it won't. And I'll tell you what, everyone now is having a little bit of a pop at him, and I've lived through this so many times in my career that, believe you me, in a few weeks' time, when he starts banging them in again, everyone will be saying how he's the best goal scorer in the world again. It's honestly, it's genuinely nuts. I said, what are they talking? What do you mean I'm doing nothing? People don't see the run after run after run after run that you have to make to score goals. And it's so frustrating when the ball doesn't come where you actually want it. And then at the end of it, people go, hey, he did nothing. Did nothing.
It comes with the territory of being a big name player in a big team that perhaps haven't hit the heights of maybe last season yet, and his own standards in terms of the number of goals yet. But I couldn't agree with you more. It'll happen. Probably happen this weekend, and he'll just sit there and have a little smile and say, fuck you, a lot of you.
not us, hopefully, Al.
We're backing him up.
Yeah, we're definitely backing him up. I'm going to put my Barcelona head on just for a second here. Why are Real Madrid so bloody lucky in the Champions League? I mean, honestly, I've seen it for, like, things happen to them in the Champions. I don't know why. I suppose you make your own luck, don't you? They'd argue that. But, I mean, the first two goals, the first one, massive deflection without too much of a threat otherwise. And the second one, even, you know, he broke clear, but Kanji did really well to get back. And the only way I think that could possibly have gone in the way he hit it was to get the exact deflection that it got to take it just past Ortega's toe, but just inside the post. And I'm sitting there thinking, this is bloody typical Real Madrid.
They make their own luck, don't they?
Nothing lucky about that forward line.
Absolutely.
That weight and the badge, isn't it? Real Madrid, they're going to fight to the end. They've got. Do you remember the season when they took out, come back against Man City, PSG,
Chelsea.
Yeah. Is that the year they beat Liverpool in the final?
And then even in the final, I thought they were outplayed largely. I mean, Liverpool had great chances. Courtois was unbelievable.
He got man of the match, didn't he?
Yeah, he most certainly did. Well, we've spoken about him a few times. Philip Foden.
Whoa!
Yeah, we have to call him Philip now. There's none of this Phil.
I think so. Yeah.
I think we have to call him Philip.
Prince Philip.
Fucking Foden.
Foden. What a fantastic Philip fucking Foden. I love that's a real alliteration. Beautiful.
Micah, I've noticed you're swearing a lot lately. You need to calm your swearing down, Micah.
It's you, Alan.
This is a respected podcast. Stop your swearing.
I'm not sure it's that respected, Alan.
It's the way you say it, though. You don't say it aggressively. Philip fucking Foden. You know? It's different. There's no anger in there. It's just, it's nice. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
What a goal. What a goal. Oh, my word, man.
What more can I say about him? He's just, he's been phenomenal this season. And it's always hard, isn't it? Because when you're talking about young players, you don't want to hype them up too much, and you don't want them to have that period in their career where everyone's saying it, similar to my career, in terms of everyone's hyping you up, but he's sustaining it and he's getting better and better and better. And for those I'm not comparing my career to Phil Foden's before some smart ass in the... I'm saying...
I was about to be that smart ass, Micah. I was about to be that smart ass.
I can see your brain working. I know you do. But the way he's managed to sustain it after having a little bit of a dip, and now becoming one of the main men. I'm not going to say no. I'm not going to say the main man, because I still give that to Rodri and Kevin De Bruyne. But one of the main men in the team. Wow.
He certainly is. Philip fucking Foden. described by Micah Wretched Richards.
Can we just rewind a minute? What was the comparison? I'm not comparing myself, but... What?
Bursting onto the scene now, I think.
You know, we had the world at our feet at a young age. He's took it, and now I'm working with you two bellends.
They kept coming back, though, Real Madrid. That was a hell of a finish from Fede Valverde, wasn't it?
Oh, it was unbelievable. The technique, wasn't it? Oh, wow.
He's another one, isn't he, Al? Like, he performs every year, and he can play right wing, he can play centre mid, he can play everywhere, but just with quality. He gives them real stability and technique in that team. It's like, and he's not that old, Valverde. He's quite young, isn't he? He's not as old as you think. He's such a mature player for his age.
When the ball's coming across, you just, I mean, everything has to be perfect, doesn't it?
Perfect.
I mean, the technique, the connection, the direction. I mean, everything about it was just magnificent. And I reckon that game next week is going to be very similar to what we saw on Tuesday night. I think it's going to be that crazy, definitely.
Before we take a break, we've discussed the first two ties. We'll discuss the other two ties after the break. But right, before we do go, who wins? Arsenal, Bayern, Real Madrid or Man City? Which two get through?
I'm going to go for both English clubs. I think it'd be extremely difficult and tough, and they'll be up against it at times, but I think just both of them will get through.
Micah?
Yeah, I agree. I've got them. We do some in CBS called the brackets. I've got Arsenal and Man City to meet in the semi-finals.
I think Arsenal, Bayern, I think it's 50-50.
But who are you going to say?
I'm going to go Arsenal, actually. I am going to go Arsenal. Not English bias, but Bayern have been a bit off it this season. There's a lot of pressure on Bayern in this game. A lot more, I think, probably than there is on Arsenal. And then, well, Man City. I think Man City are the best team in the world at the moment, generally over the period of time. So we'll find out if we're right in about a week's time. But we'll discuss the other two Champions League semi-finals when we come back, and maybe a little bit on the nervousness of the Championship.
I'm Anthony Scaramucci, former White House Director of Communications and Wall Street financier.
And I'm Katty Kay, US Special Correspondent for BBC Studios. I've been covering American politics for almost three decades.
Welcome to The Rest is Politics US, brought to you by Goalhanger.
In this pivotal year for the United States, democracy, and world affairs, Britain's biggest podcast, The Rest is Politics, is launching stateside.
Uncovering secrets from inside the Biden and Trump inner circles and how they shape the world's most important economy, but also the global economy too.
New episodes are released every Friday morning.
Just search The Rest is Politics US wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to The Rest is Football with Micah Richards, Alan Shearer and me, Gary Lineker. We're discussing a fabulous couple of days of Champions League football. We've discussed the two English clubs in their particular matches, but two more brilliant games last night. We're doing this on Thursday morning. Spectacular football matches. And PSG against Barcelona. A very, very inexperienced Barcelona going to PSG, but they've got so much fabulous talent that they put up a hell of a show. And what a result.
You know, when you think about it, they've got 16, 17-year-olds playing in there and going to that stadium. And I mean, they're not looking out of place. In fact, excelling in what they were doing. I mean, bloody brilliant, isn't it? I mean, another great night, some great performances, a great game, and it was great to watch, great viewing.
They've got some kids there, haven't they? Oh. At Barca. I mean, Kubasi, I mean, he's 17, playing at the back, and like the little balls through the lines, and he's looking forward, and like, incredibly talented. Great to see Pedri come on, and brilliant pass for the goal. Araujo, I thought he played Mbappe really well. That's probably the worst game I've ever seen Kylian Mbappe play. He had no shots on target, no assists, 25% duels won, and lost possession 14 times. It's as rare as rocking horse shit seeing Mbappe play like that.
I wouldn't say it's understandable, but his future's up in the air. Looks like he's going to go to Real Madrid. If you look in Ligue 1, where at times he's been substituted, he's not been in his absolute best form. He scored some goals against Real Sociedad. He played against Montpellier as well, scored some worldies in that. But I don't like the word body language, because I always feel like it's disrespectful to to fellow players. But it doesn't seem like he's playing with that freedom that we normally see him playing with. It looks like he's got a lot on his mind, and he's a marked man as well. We have to say that. As soon as he gets anywhere near the ball, he's got three players round him. But yeah, I agree with you, Gaz. It wasn't his...
Everyone's entitled to an off day, and he's a very rare. But possibly subconsciously, Alan, do you think he could maybe have checked out a little bit? Because I think he's clearly going to go to Real Madrid, isn't he?
The last I looked, that may have changed in the last few days or so, but I'm sure he's got something like 38 goals.
Oh, he's had an amazing 38 season,
games or something like that. So without being too critical of him, yes, you're allowed a bad game or a poor game, we've said that, but mentally, I think it's tiring for him. And I think the sooner this season comes to an end for him, the better it will be for him personally, because he needs to move on. He needs to announce whatever's happening, when it's happening, and then I think it'll be the better for him. He'll get it off his head and then go out and enjoy his football again. But he doesn't seem as if he's got the happiness or the you're seeing a shadow, certainly yesterday, of the player that he is, that we know he can be and is.
Absolutely. Xavi made a couple of good substitutions, didn't he? Pedri came on and immediately made a fantastic pass and an assist, and then obviously Christensen came on and scored the winning goal as well.
Was that his first touch?
Pedri's first touch, the pass. What a ball, wasn't it?
It was ridiculous. It was, again, I spoke about a little bit last night, but it was the fact that, you know, when you strikers make them runs, if you're going to make them runs, they always used to say to midfielders, play at an angle. But the fact that he was managed to play that ball straight, that the timing of the run has to be perfect and the weight of the ball has to be perfect as well, because normally the keeper just comes out and picks it up. So to do that after just coming on was brilliant. And then Christensen gets his goal.
I think did he score with his first touch as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
From the corner.
Yeah. Both with the first touch. That's why it's incredible substitutions. They've got so many young talent. Lamine Yamal, did you see that?
Yeah, Lamal,
outside
the
foot cross that he made in.
Brilliant.
So much talent there, but you win nothing with kids, do you?
Where is Alan Hansen?
Where's Alan Hansen when you need him? Obviously, I've got a fancy Barcelona going through, but you never know with this boss, because when you've got, I think there is a mix of youth there and inexperience in the second leg, and they'll be vulnerable to the counter. But it's 3-2. It's great to come home with a lead, isn't it? It gives you a lot of hope.
You'd fancy them now, wouldn't you? I mean, I know it's going to be tough, and with the players that PSG you've got, but you'd have to fancy Barcelona now with being in that position.
Fair play to Rafinha as well. As you know, we've looked at him at Barcelona, and you know, we saw him a lot at Leeds, and he looked like he was going to be superstar. You know, when he went, okay, he's playing around better players at Barcelona, no respect to Leeds, but every time you watch him, he's sort of, I don't say flat to deceive, but yesterday he was really, really good. Like, amazing. He was amazing. Like, his work rate, his technique, his finishing. He had absolutely everything. So I was happy for Rafinha as well. Fellow Leeds boy.
He's the first Barcelona player to score a brace in the knockout stage of the Champions League since guess who?
Messi, obviously.
The obvious answer to that question. If Xavi wins the Champions League, and I know it's a long shot given the inexperience of their side, do you think he'll stay?
Yeah. How could you walk away from that?
Indeed.
I think he would, yeah.
I don't think he
really
will. I think there's been a little bit of grumblings before, and they announced, okay, he's not the man to take us forward. So, don't remember, he's won a league in his tenure there. If he wins the Champions League, he's going to be like, thank you very much. I've conquered a player, manager. I don't think he stays.
To walk away from what could happen at that club in terms of, when we just mentioned all the youngsters that are coming through. I mean, with a couple of additions, I know they're skint and they're having a hard time and all of that, but with a couple of quality additions and those youngsters coming through, they could be around for a long time. Challenging again.
It's quite exasperating, I think, for coaches, and it can be for players, that the expectancy levels, you think they're big here, honestly, at Barcelona, and that's what I think he was really miffed with. I think it just, you know, the constant whining about where they're going, how they're doing and stuff like that got to him in the end. Let's turn to the other Spanish team that also won in midweek, Atletico Madrid. who beat Dortmund 2-1. They went two goals up quite quickly and absolutely battered Dortmund for quite some time. Simeone still keeps rattling out some good results.
Yeah, they're right in it. I mean, the game that I watched, I mean, I didn't see all of that game, but I saw a lot of it. And, I mean, Atletico battered them. I mean, they were 2-0 up. Then they had two, I think, really good chances to go 3-4 up. And if that goes in, then they're out of it. And Dortmund, I thought, were pretty hopeless, but then sort of found a way to get back in the game in the last 20 minutes or so, and then got their goal with Haller. And then they actually hit the bar, didn't they, in the last 3 or 4 minutes?
Yeah. Julian Brandt, wasn't it? I used to buy him on Football Manager all the time. And
fantasy football, Football Manager. Thankfully, you did actually play the game as well, Mike, at one point.
I know, yeah, but he's... Because he was linked with Liverpool once. There was stories that he was supposed to buy Julian Brandt instead of Salah. That was a story around the time.
I think they made the right choice, with all due respect. Atletico have struggled away from home this season, and Dortmund did well to get a 2-1 out of that. It's not a terrible result. I think that one's pretty much in the balance. But with that now, so if Simeone's teams get ahead, you know it's going to be bloody hard to break them down. He's been manager there now for, I think, 13 years. I mean, he's probably the longest serving manager in the top leagues. I can't think off the top of my head if there's anyone that's been around longer. But, I mean, he's got a remarkable record, really, for, you know, because he's obviously not at Real Madrid or Barcelona. And there is a difference, even though Atletico Madrid have had a lot of money in recent times. But the guy's he's a grinder.
You know it's going to be tough when you go then, and I mean that club is him, isn't it? It's got that. It's mirrored him, isn't it? Is that you've got the aggression, you've got toughness, you've got all of those things in him. He's just stamped all over that club, isn't he?
We've just found one manager that's served the club longer than him in Europe's top five leagues, who's been there 16 years. And if either of you get this, I'm going to give you one of my golden boots. But you've got 10 seconds. And Alan's got plenty of them anyway, so he doesn't need one. I'll tell you, 16 years as a manager at which German football club in the Bundesliga? And if you get the club and the name, I'll be shocked.
Pass.
Okay.
Club and the name.
Come on, you must have had him on Football Manager when he was about 12 years old.
This is what I mean.
Quick, he's Googling it, look.
You're Googling, no Googling.
Put your hands up, let's see your hands. Keep your hands up. That's it.
He managed a team that beat Bayern Munich at the weekend.
Who was it? I can't even remember who beat
them. I know. Heidenheim.
Oh, no, I wouldn't know that. Heidenheim.
I know you won't. Frank Schmidt, everybody's mate. Smithy. Oh,
Frankie Schmidt. That's him.
Frankie Schmidt. He's been there, 16 years, just a little bit longer than Diego Simeone.
You said top European club? Heidenheim.
Top five league, he said.
Top five European leagues. They're mid-table in the Bundesliga.
You got me steering in a different direction. Here we go.
We'll finish shortly, but tell me, right, who's going to win from those two ties?
Barcelona and...
Ooh, pause. I'm going to go Atletico Madrid. Two Spanish teams in the semis, two English teams. What about that? Playoff. Premier League versus La Liga. What do you think? Come on, boys.
Barca... And Dortmund.
Ooh,
Dortmund. Dortmund. I was going Dortmund. Ooh, what about you, Micah?
Wow, I'm going Atletico. Have to. And I'm going to go Barcelona.
What did you just call them? What was that?
I thought I'd get away with it. I'm trying to just... how do you say it? Barcelona. I tried to put a little Spanish... Yeah, went wrong.
Yeah, I know what you tried to do. This is a bit personal, but I'll talk about the championship because everyone's choking at the top.
What's happening? What is happening?
Leicester won at the weekend, which was an amazing weekend for Leicester, and me as a Leicester fan, obviously, because both Leeds and Ipswich lost. And then in midweek, Leicester lose at Millwall, but then neither Leeds nor Ipswich could win their games. Both drew 0-0. Leicester lost 1-0. Not one goal between the three sides at the top of the table. And it's so tight now. It's a little bit like the Premier League, the top three there. Leicester still have it in their own hands. But, oh boy.
You got a game in hand, Leicester?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
He got some wiggle room. Look at him talking it down now. It's really tight. He wasn't saying this before, was he?
No, I wasn't. I'm getting a bit tense. I'm getting a bit, I don't know what's going on.
If you're getting tense, imagine what the players and fans are.
Well, the players, I don't know, as a player, you should just be enjoying it, shouldn't you? And get out there.
Well, obviously they're not with the results.
It's so much easier being a player, though, isn't it? You can actually do something about it, I always think.
It's easy being a striker. You can make the difference. You can have a stinker and then score a tap-in after 90 minutes. We make a mistake.
Hang on a minute, Micah Richards. Were you not listening to a word I said at the beginning of this podcast about run after run after run? You stop pretending you're fishing. Stop pretending. Look, he's reeling me in, he's saying here. Anyway, I'm going to end this podcast now, Micah, because you've upset me. So that's it for today. Goodbye from me.
Goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.